Hi, my name is Brendan Malone and you're listening to The Dispatches, the podcast that strives to cut through all the noise in order to challenge the popular narratives of the day with some good old-fashioned contrarian thinking. You might not always agree, but at least you'll be taking a deeper look at the world around you. Hi everybody, welcome along to this episode of The Dispatches. Before I jump into today's topic of conversation, let me just say a huge thank you for all of the feedback that you have been sending me. I really appreciate that, and it's really great to hear from people who are finding benefit and enjoyment from this particular podcast. A huge thank you. One little thing, could I just ask a favour, and that is if you do find benefit in this podcast and you haven't already done so, then please share it around, let people know. Even if it's maybe only just a particular episode that really takes your fancy, then let your friends and family know, encourage them to tune in and start becoming regular listeners as well. All of that sort of stuff really helps, so a huge thank you. Right, today's topic of conversation, are we going to have to learn to live with COVID? And I actually originally had an idea in mind for the title of today's episode, which would be Have Ardern and Bloomfield Just Lost the Room? In other words, are they actually starting to lose public confidence? But I thought that question really points to a deeper question, and that is the fact that as New Zealanders, are we actually, maybe not even so much, are we going to have to learn to live with it? Because that's an inevitability, but it seems that maybe there's a shifting in perception and mood, I think, amongst the public in the last sort of 24 to 48 hours or so. And it seems now that I could be reading this wrong myself, but it seems there is a bit more of a willingness, I think, to entertain that idea now amongst the public. There's sort of a growing acceptance, it seems, that we can't really keep going the way that we are. It doesn't quite seem like it's the most carefully considered strategy for trying to keep people safe and also trying to keep, so from the virus, but also trying to keep people safe from the harms that are caused by lockdowns, because this is a really important, but they're not zero-sum games. And I don't know about you, but this lockdown is actually starting to feel a little different than the previous ones. And I mean just the general public mood and also what's happening. It seems the last lockdown, you'd have to say, was probably relatively successful and all things considered, relatively smooth. Yes, there were problems. Yes, there were things that were worthy of critique. But in the grand scheme of things, we sort of came through relatively unscathed. And economically, we weren't belted about too much. And some of the serious implications and effects that, you know, these things can have on people's lives didn't really manifest in such a big way in New Zealand. So we're kind of, in many ways, we're doubly blessed, because one is that we've avoided the worst excesses of a COVID outbreak that, you know, is claiming lives left, right and centre. But this last lockdown, we also avoided the worst excesses of the harms that can be caused by lockdowns. But this time around, something feels a little bit different. Like, it's very clear from the media coverage that there are a lot more small to medium-sized businesses, and also conversations I'm having with people who actually own those businesses, that there is a lot more pain being felt this time. And it's not quite as straightforward. There's also an indication that some of the other, what would you perhaps call it, the mental health well-being, the psychological factors, are actually starting to hit a little bit harder this time around. And then, of course, there's, like this morning I read an article indicating that we're actually starting to run out of building products that we're reliant on Auckland and the rest of the country is for those building products, and around the rest of the country they're starting to run out of them. And so things like that have really serious kind of flow-on effects, and it just feels a little bit different this time. And now, if you'd asked me that question a week ago, have Ardern and Bloomfield just lost the room, I would have said no. It was seemed pretty clear to me from the public perception and the social media feedback and the commentary that you see in the comments at the bottom of news articles and things like that, that generally speaking, although people are doing it tougher this time, I think, and as I said, I could be totally wrong, because this is not a scientific survey, right? But even though people seem to be doing it tougher this time, that there was still a sort of a willingness to hang in there. That I would describe the commentary, general sort of tone of the commentary, as like, okay, yep, we can do this. This is hard, but we can do this, and we're doing it for a good reason. If you looked at the comments underneath various media articles, I think that the general tone was, or the general balance of tone would have been that probably, I would say, 2/3 to 75% of those comments would have been supportive of the lockdown and what was happening. There was not much in the way of hypercritical responses to that. There was a probably within that, you know, that generally supportive group, there was a very small group who were absolute diehard Labour fanatics. And you'd see their sort of comments, you know, "We love you, Cindy. We thank you. You know, you're keeping us safe. It's such a blessing and a gift from God to have you as our Prime Minister." And I'm not exaggerating. Those are the tone of some of those comments. So they're a small minority. The other kind of people who are just diehard Labour supporters, you know, that really there's probably nothing that Labour could do to lose their support. If the Prime Minister got on TV tomorrow and said, "Look, we'd like you to take your cat to the end of the driveway and sacrifice it, to various pagan deities to bring about a safe end to the COVID pandemic," you know, these are the people who would have fur at the end of their driveways. So, you know, there's a small group there. There was probably a much bigger group within that generally supportive class of people who were saying things like, "Yeah, it's tough, it's hard, it sucks, but, you know, we can do this, we've got this, not long to go," that sort of a tone. And then there was the smaller minority of people who were either hypercritical or they were just asking questions, you know, "How does this make sense?" or "This doesn't seem to really add up with this," you know, that kind of stuff. Or the people who are just, you know, nothing Labour could do could ever satisfy them, and everything that this government does is wrong. Doesn't matter what they do, everything is wrong, and they're going to be critical of everything. But that, by and large, that those two parties were in the minority. Well, something interesting happened, really. It started happening last night and again this morning on different articles that were popping up after yesterday's lockdown announcement. In actual fact, that the comments were actually now starting to swing the other way in their direction. There was a lot more people that I saw who were just really either questioning in a very strong way what was going on, or were just out and out hostile to what was, you know, had sort of come about as a result of yesterday's 4 p.m. announcement. And to be honest with you, I have to say, even for me, I was surprised by what I heard in yesterday's announcement. And so that's what I want to talk about today. And I want to actually focus on an article that was published this morning in the Herald. And I just want to go through it and just comment on it line by line as we go through it. So the title of the article is "Delta COVID-19 Delta Outbreak, Auckland Officially in Longest Ever Lockdown, But There Is Hope." It's interesting, the framing of that headline. I want to come back to that point about the longest ever lockdown. But let's start reading the article. "Aucklanders need to be vaccinated by the end of the week," says an immunologist who believes New Zealanders can't escape COVID-19 because it's changing so much. Immunologist Graham LaGrosse, director of the Maligan Institute, said New Zealand couldn't survive without Auckland working, and that was concerning. Speaking to the AM show, he said Auckland needed to be vaccinated now by the end of the week. "We really need to get you guys vaccinated 100%. Now, this is interesting for a couple of reasons. Number one is, over the last couple of weeks, I've been following international media and local commentary as well, but more we're seeing this in the international media. There has definitely been a shifting tone amongst what you might call the consensus experts, so the experts who are generally considered to be part of the group consensus. And there's definitely been a shifting tone now towards saying, "Look, we need to learn to live with this. Delta has changed the game." It hasn't really taken hold in New Zealand quite yet. We seem a little bit possibly reticent to accept that that could change. I sense there's still this, you know, sort of undying belief that we can eliminate COVID again, even in the Delta era. It'd be great if we could, but that seems to be the people are stubbornly sort of clinging to that. But what I'm reading today in the paper from Graham LaGrosse here would seem to indicate that now that even here in New Zealand, that public voice of the experts is starting to change a bit. So that's first thing that's interesting. Number two is his comment about, you know, "We really need to get you guys vaccinated 100%. And I wonder to myself whether that's a reflection of the changing data and around vaccination rates. So initially, the claim was that vaccines were going to be the great panacea, and that if we sort of achieved a 70 to 80% vaccination rate, we would be in the clear. Well, the data now seems to indicate that that is not the case. That's not high enough. And one article I was reading last week was indicating the experts were suggesting that you needed a vaccination rate of about 97%, which is like, at that point, you might as well say 100%, which completely changes the game and the question of exactly what is going on and how you would even hope to achieve that. But yeah, let me carry on. He said the virus had gone underground and, quote unquote, we are chasing our tails now. So this is pretty clear that this guy's saying, look, we're going to need to adjust our thinking about this. The Delta virus could hide in domestic animals, and at some point New Zealand needed to learn to deal with it. We can't escape the virus. It's changing so much. Now, I know some people this morning saw that point about domestic animals and they sort of thought, oh my gosh, are they saying that, you know, we're going to need to do something about our pets? Well, I think he's referencing here a study that I read some commentary from a couple of scientists who were talking about this a couple of weeks ago. There's a study that's indicated that in animals and wildlife, there are very high rates of COVID-19, but that doesn't necessarily mean what we might think it might mean initially. So it could be a version of it that's just, that animals get it. You know, there's a bad case and a good case, or, you know, like a worst case, an average, and a probably an extreme case scenario for what that actually means. Apparently deers, for some reason, have got a lot of it. He's not saying, I don't think here, that we're going to have to mask up our pets. I saw someone who thought that maybe that's what he was indicating. I think he's just highlighting that it's here. It's here to stay. It's not really going to go away. Like he says, we can't escape the virus. It's changing so much. And this is the interesting comment here that he starts to make. Epidemiologists are modellers and could only work on historic data, while immunologists worked on how to address viruses. LaGrosse said Delta had found its way in and was going to keep popping up. He said lockdowns were exhausting and no society could go through multiple lockdowns. I want to come back to that point at the very end when I give a little bit of my own commentary. But this comment about epidemiologists are modellers and could only work on historic data. And I wondered to myself, is he signalling here, look, that effectively, I wonder if he's putting a sort of distinction between immunologists and modellers, saying, look, you need to start listening to immunologists more than you're listening to modellers. It's too narrow a focus. That could be part of it. Or whether he's sort of saying, look, you've got to understand that epidemiologists are doing their best, but at the end of the day, all they are doing is a best guess. That's what they're giving you. They're their most informed guess based on historic data, but things have changed now. I think he sort of seemed to indicate that we need to take a broader approach here. We can't just have this narrow model, sort of predictive model. And by the way, we've in the New Zealand media, we've had over this particular lockdown consistently on major key moments for modelling what was going to happen with cases, there has been, the modelling I've seen reported has been wrong in those major key points. It's got it wrong each time. I think it was sort of 3 out of 4 it might have been, or maybe even 4 out of 4. But there's been some major examples of this. And so maybe that's what he's sort of alluding to. This is the key point here. He said this: major societal pressures are underway and economic pressures. And when you do your modelling, you've got to put that into the modelling too. At what point do you start worrying about all the cancer death and the other socially induced deaths and all the alcoholism and things like that, he said. As an immunologist, he understood how infectious diseases interact with the immune system and what the virus would be doing in 6 months' time. And so this is interesting. He then went on to say, look, New Zealand should be trying to get 80 to 90% of the population vaccinated, even with just one jab, to give New Zealand a really good shot. So that's kind of interesting. He's sort of indicating 90%. Is the magic number, but it is clearly higher than what it was previously. It's definitely gone up. But this comment he's made about modelling, and this does seem to be him offering a gentle and professional critique of the current policy and strategy, where he seems to be indicating, look, we need to think about more than just modelling the number of COVID cases. We need, you know, we're getting to a point now, and I think this is a valid question to ask, at what point do you need to start including into your modelling the other negative effects of what's going on, not just the COVID negativity, but also the negativity and the harms of your strategy? And that's a really valid question. I don't think it was as big a deal last time around because we managed to get through that lockdown relatively quickly and relatively unscathed. And I think if you have a lockdown that could be truly short and sharp and might only last a week or maybe two, then you can say, okay, it's done. It's sort of, that's it. We're out. And now, yes, there have been some negative consequences, but they are minimal enough that we can carry on and resolve and work our way out of them. They're not the end of the world. But when you keep going back into lockdown, so now a second one, and for Auckland by the end of this will be the longest lockdown that they've ever had in Auckland. And so this all starts to add up now in a way that a previous, or it didn't really matter as much, or the impact wasn't as great the first time around when you have one lockdown and one and done. But now that it's not one and done and it's starting to get repetitive and they are lengthy in nature, it does seem to me you really need to start actually considering exactly what's going on here, because lockdowns are not a zero-sum game. This is really important. And I think this time around it seems more people are realizing that because the effects of it are being felt more than they were previously. And there's still a group of people who don't really grasp this, because probably they are in a more advantaged economic position. So maybe you've got a public sector job, or you're in government, or you're working for a big corporation, and wages and job and stuff like that is sort of relatively safe. You can take a bit more of a battering yet. But there are a lot of people in small to medium-sized businesses, and that's to say nothing of the sort of psychological and other types of harms that are caused and are being experienced this time around. And so I think this is a really, really valid point. We are now moving into new territory. This is not like last year's lockdown at all. Like I said, for me, this feels different, and we are definitely in new territory here. Things have changed. The nature of what's going on and the impacts of it, I think, are definitely shifting now, and they need to be taken seriously. Like I said, if you'd asked me a week ago, had they lost the room, I would have said, no, I don't think so. I think everyone's hanging in there. But this morning, I'm not so sure. And I think this is part of that. People are starting to feel the effects of this one a lot more. Let me carry on. Auckland is in for New Zealand's longest ever level 4 lockdown, but there is light at the end of the tunnel. Now, this is interesting. That whole statement is fascinating, actually, because this, remember, was supposed to be a short, sharp lockdown. Remember, that was the strategy for dealing with this. We'd go back into short, sharp lockdowns. Well, when you're about to come out of, assuming they do come out of, because there's absolutely no guarantees that they will, in principle, like you'll hear in a moment, that's what they're saying, but there's no guarantee. But if they do come out of it next week out of 4, they will still be probably under level 3, which is still actually a reasonably restrictive form of lockdown. So before they even get to level 3, by next week, it will be the longest ever lockdown, level 4 lockdown, that Auckland has ever been subjected to, that we've had continuously in one place in this country. And that is not a short, sharp lockdown then. That looks and feels very different to what the original promised claim was. This is yet another example of governments, and this is typical of all governments, doesn't matter what flavour, where you get over-promising and under-delivery. And this is another example of that. This big, glamorous and glorious promise of a short, sharp lockdown, which has turned into the longest. And then once you account for level 3, it actually starts to look, it's pretty, I really feel for people in Auckland. I really feel for them. Carrying on with the article, Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said this morning that Auckland could move to alert level 3 next week, even with unlinked community cases. Now, this is kind of interesting. Let me carry on before I comment on this. The government decided yesterday that Auckland's COVID restrictions would continue to be set at alert level 4 until at least midnight on Tuesday, September 21st, meaning the city will have spent 35 days under level 4 restrictions, 2 days longer than the original lockdown. So definitely not short and sharp. But Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern offered some hope. Cabinet has agreed in principle, quote unquote, in principle, that's the key statement there, that Auckland will shift down alert levels next Wednesday, pending a review at Cabinet on Monday. And so if things don't quite go the way they want to in that review, well, in principle, we were going to bring you out, but practically we can't. Could be. That's a possibility here. So if you're living in Auckland, I would suggest to you that you need to prepare yourself psychologically for that possibility. And then if it doesn't happen, great. You know, it's no loss. But if it does happen, at least you're prepared for it. Ardern told TVNZ's breakfast program that mystery COVID cases don't necessarily need to be linked before Auckland moves out of level 4. Now, this is where I think you're starting to lose the room. Because if I was an Aucklander, my first response to that would be, okay, if that's the case, and we don't necessarily need to have mystery cases linked before we move out of level 4, then why didn't we move out of level 4 on Monday? Because what's the difference? Really, what is the difference between, you know, Monday and Wednesday next week? Why? If we can move out with mystery cases that are unlinked, then why can't we move out now with mystery cases that are unlinked? And this is where I think people are starting to ask some more questions, or certainly starting to think and consider the possibility that perhaps the government doesn't really have a clear idea of where to next. I remember last year, John Key said this about the original lockdown. He said, it's very easy to go into these things. It's a lot harder to get out of them. And I think this time around, I suspect that's what we're seeing come to fruition. That it's not quite, like if you lock down an entire country into level 4 for one case, then what is the case number that is considered safe to let a region, in this case, out of level 4, where there's still cases happening? If one case was enough to lock it all down, then does one case mean that you have to stay locked down? And, you know, do you know what I mean? What is the measure? What's the metric? I sort of get it. If I was a betting man or a guessing man, maybe not so much a betting man, but a guessing man, I would say I'm not sure they have a clear idea still about what that looks like, about what the journey out of this should really look like. Like, what is the metric? And, you know, things have changed, as I said. The Prime Minister went on to say one person should do each household's shopping. Ideally, that person would have been vaccinated, Ardern said. Now, this is interesting. So there's another layer of sort of suggested of safety precautions now being added in here. Again, this sort of, and what it sort of indicates is that we're on the fly here, that there's sort of, so on the one hand, people are saying, just listen to the experts. But on the other hand, it does seem the experts, that they're working on the fly as well. That they're taking the data and using their expertise to try and make the most informed guesses they can. And this is, I think, what our original immunologist commentary at the start of the article was alluding to. We need to start thinking about more and factoring in lots of other factors here too, because, you know, it's not really simple and clear cut anymore. The elimination approach remained the best one for New Zealand until the population was widely vaccinated. This is Jacinda Ardern saying this. I will continue to defend the strategy we've had because compared to other countries, New Zealand has had 521 days where we have not had stay-at-home orders, she said. It's worked well, but we will constantly review what we do in the future. Now, that was an interesting piece of commentary to me and a response from her. Because, to be honest with you, it doesn't really matter that we've had 521 COVID-free days or days free of stay-at-home orders. That's really not the issue here. I don't think too many New Zealanders are particularly fazed by that or even convinced by that. What they would say is, I think, in response, well, okay, that was the past, though. Now we're dealing with a new type of future and a mutation, and there's more here going on. So you can't just look back and say, well, look, trust me, the strategy that worked in the past was really good because in the past we got a good outcome. We're not dealing in the past. And I think this is what the original commentary that we heard earlier on in the article was you know, from Graham LaGrosse was really referring to. It's things have changed now. And you can't keep acting the way you have been acting or thinking the way you have been thinking. And I sense that, well, that comment from the Prime Minister seems to indicate to me that possibly that the government is still hasn't quite got its head out of this yet, that it's still thinking in 2020 mode. But this is different now. I understand what she's saying. You know, we've got to eliminate. But the elimination strategy, like she says, it remains the best one for New Zealand. until the population was widely vaccinated. But that statement is actually dependent on two really important factors that don't seem to be factoring in here, which is what Graham Lagos was talking about. So one is, it assumes that there are no harms that will come from an elimination approach. And he's saying, well, there are factors now that are starting to really raise their heads, and we need to consider those. So if those harms start to actually cause serious problems in and of themselves, then all of a sudden it might not be a far better option. You know, previously it worked okay in our favor, but ongoing, that might not remain to be the case. And secondly, the second point is that statement, the elimination approach remained the best one for New Zealand until the population was widely vaccinated, assumes that widespread vaccination is actually going to solve the problem. And at the moment, and any honest person looking at the data would have to say that question has not been resolved fully yet. It isn't clear from the data we've had overseas from highly vaccinated populations as to whether or not actually that will be the promised panacea. It's not quite clear. There are some questions there still. So it seems to me that all things considered, that there's this whole idea of we put ourselves into an elimination strategy. It seemed we had a good dose of blind luck that went with us last time around, and we came out of it in a better position than other countries did. But the question is, the original strategy, remember, was never elimination. The original strategy was management. And the question is now, have we made a mistake by continuing to fixate on an elimination strategy when now we really need to actually get more serious and say, okay, we actually need to go back to what was the original and very prudent strategy, which was management. How do you restrict cases rather than trying to eliminate the virus altogether? Because it seems now we're not going to get away with elimination as a strategy. Let me carry on with the article, just a couple more points, and then we'll wrap this up. There are two catches to the government's plan. This is the government's plan to get us out of this. The first is the government has decided that the rest of the country will stay living under alert level 2 restrictions despite having no community cases. The government has also made no decision about whether the rest of the country will head to alert level 1 next week, or whether it will stay at alert level 2, even if Auckland itself moves down alert levels. This, to me, is extremely concerning. And this is why, point number 2, why I think they are now starting to lose the room. Because anyone with half an ounce of common sense, anyone who's even got a mildly functioning peanut, will tell you that we've had more than 300 days of COVID-free days in the South Island now, including through this latest outbreak in New Zealand. And it's clear with Delta that it's not really like Delta can hide effectively. It's if there's cases, they start appearing. So it would have to be almost miraculous that they haven't, you know, like some really isolated family somewhere's got it and just haven't told anyone. So there's been no testing and it's never shown up. Because Delta variant, the way that it is, you can't hide it like that. And so it seems to me that a government that's saying, like I think what happened was last week, everyone in the South Island was pretty much, well, not everyone, but the majority, I think, in the South Island were like, okay, we don't think we even need to be in level 2. We think we should be at level 1. However, it's just one more week, right? People weren't really particularly accepting or understanding of it. And I think rightly so. They were looking at it and going, well, this doesn't really make sense, because it didn't really make sense last week. But the thinking was, okay, one more week and we're out. Well, we get to the end of that week, still no COVID here. We've had none, this outbreak at all. And they say another week at level 2. And on top of that, there's no commitment that we will come out of level 2 next week either. That is troubling. And that does not speak to a prudent policy. This actually now sounds more like paranoia than prudence. Saying, well, we're not certain if there's COVID there. Well, I would have to say that what we know about COVID, and particularly Delta, I think any reasonable person would have to say, in actual fact, we can have a reasonable degree of certainty. First of all, you can never have absolute certainty that there's no secret COVID lurking around. It's just impossible. you know, but you should never build a policy around what you don't know, or in this particular way anyway. You need to build your policy around what is actually happening in this case. And so we can have a reasonable degree of certainty that there is not COVID in the South Island. And if you've got a reasonable degree of certainty that that's the case, then you shouldn't be locked down in level two. Level two might seem less restrictive, therefore better than level four, but that's the wrong way to measure things. You shouldn't be looking at a worse situation and saying, well, the current situation is better than a much worse one that we could be in. What you need to be doing is saying, okay, let's look at the best case scenario, which is level zero or level one, and then compare level two to that and say, is level two worse than level one? Yes, it is. And it's doing economic harm. There are businesses that are still getting pummeled by level two in the South Island, and that really does matter, because that, and people didn't really still, I think some people don't quite understand this. They sort of think that when you talk about economics, you're simply being some sort of greedy capitalist swine who just is heartless and all you think about is money. No, it's actually very practical and prudent, because if your economy is in strife and people haven't got jobs and everything suffers, it's not simply just a matter of saying, oh, some greedy people want to make money. No. It's about ensuring that our country can continue to function safely, even in the midst of a pandemic. And economics are a factor in that equation. And so level two is definitely worse, and it's having an impact that level one would not be having economically. And so if you've got that situation, and that's the comparison you should be making. And secondly, then the second question you also need to ask alongside that is there a necessity then for us to remain in level two? And the answer to that question is no, there's not. And so the fact that we've remained in level two and there's no clear indication we will get out of it next week, I think a lot more people are now starting to say, hold on, what's going on here? Because as I said, this isn't prudence. This actually seems more like paranoia. It seems like the sort of policy where a government might come out and say, look, we think there could be an unknown armed offender in the city of Dunedin. We've got no indication there is, but we think there could be, so we want everyone to stay home and lock your doors and don't leave your home for the next 48 hours, you know, just in case. That's not a prudent policy. It's not a prudent response. And a lot of people now, I think, are starting to see that. And that's why there is this mood shift that started to happen, I think, in the last 24 hours. The article goes on. The second catch in the government plan is that the government has drawn a line under the support it will offer businesses, despite growing calls for more help. Last Friday, Finance Minister Grant Robertson announced additional rounds of the resurgence support payment of $1,500 plus $400 for each employee. A third round of the wage subsidy will be open from Friday. Ardern defended this decision yesterday, saying that the government has put more financial support in place this lockdown than it did during the last lockdown. Again, that's not really helpful as a metric, because the previous lockdown, so once you've been through one lockdown, your business takes a pummeling, then you're coming out of it, and then you go into a second one. For some businesses, that means you've got a compounding problem now. So it's not like, oh, we had one, we came out of it, and we reset the counter back to zero. For some businesses, they get pummeled in the first lockdown, they come out of it, they are still in a situation where the best analogy would be they're effectively, what would you say, that they're carrying a debt, if you like, that was caused by the first lockdown, and they're trying to sort of trade their way out of it, and then they get hit with a second lockdown. And so now the debt, the problem starts to compound. It's one problem on top of another problem, not two separate problems. And I think this is one of the failings. In fact, I've got an episode coming up about this, because I think this is a moral failing of this government, that to small and medium-sized businesses in this country. That's the article goes on a bit more, but that's really all I wanted to say about the article. Here's my thoughts on this. Like I said, why are we still on level two around the rest of the country? That looks like paranoia rather than prudence. Level four continues in Auckland, but then yesterday the government said that effectively what the government has said yesterday is, well, we don't really need level four to remain, but we're going to keep in place anyway. And I think a lot of people who are really getting hurt by this, and the feedback I'm receiving from different people who out of Auckland who are in positions where they connect on the ground with lots of different people from all sorts of persuasions and political approaches and situations in life, is that this time around, this has really hit Aucklanders a lot harder, be it the psychological stuff or be it the economic stuff. A lot of people are really hurting this time around. And so if you're in that situation, you probably, I'd imagine, there'd be a growing number of people who would be starting to say, well, why are we still in this if, as the Prime Minister says, we could come out of it next week, even if we're in the same situation we're in right now today? And I think people do start to ask questions at that point, and I think that is where your loss of public confidence really starts to kick in. Here's my thoughts going forward, just to wrap up with. I don't think, no matter what happens from here, I don't think another New Zealand lockdown will be well received at all. If you'd asked me this question about a year ago, I thought, I think we probably would have just sort of ridden with it, but I'm not so sure now. I think what's happened is with this lockdown, because the impact of it was felt so much more, I think a third one will be, I think you will see a level of pushback from the public that we haven't seen before. I mean, even if that's only verbal and vocalizations, and people who previously have not been outspoken and in fact who have been very supportive of what's gone on previously, I just suspect that the public mood will change, and a lot of those people, if there was an attempt to try another one. I mean, I guess that could change, though, if the situation was serious enough. I guess it's whatever people consider to be the hardest and maybe they're most fearful of. You know, if COVID went rampant and people were just so afraid, then maybe they would just stay in their homes. But I get the general sense that people are going to, there's a lot of, I get the sense people are evaluating not just what they're hearing around the rest of the world, not just the impact of this lockdown, but I think also they're evaluating the government performance with a lot more scrutiny this time around. And people are looking at this as a sort of yardstick. And so let's imagine this lockdown looks a little bit hinky around the edges about strategically whether it really was executed as well and as properly and as prudently as it could have been. And then you try and say, we want to do another one of those and we'll call it a short, sharp lockdown. Well, people are not going to believe you a third time. They're not going to believe that because they know that just didn't turn out to be the case last time. So, yeah, it's an interesting dynamic that lies ahead for us. Here's what I'd say to wrap it all up with. My genuine hope is that we manage to get through the next 12 months or so. I think this will go on longer than 12 months, but the next 12 months in front of us without either extreme carnage, you know, from the virus or any sort of unjust authoritarianism that is born out of desperation. So a government that isn't really quite clear how to solve the problem, and so it just starts, you know, going and throwing extremes at the wall and hoping they'll stick. You know, well, we just need to clamp down harder, you know, and that'll solve the problem. It didn't work last time, but maybe we didn't clamp down hard enough, and if we go harder, that'll fix it. That would be an absolute disaster. I think we need to keep having the conversation. I think there needs to be a public conversation and conversations amongst people on the street that just needs to keep happening about this and about the strategy, because I firmly believe that that's the only way you get a really healthy accountability in a society, is if there is a healthy level of free and open discourse about these sorts of things and about government policy and strategies. In the past, we've tended to say, oh, look, don't question, you're a threat. I mean, certainly that's what happened last time around. People who questioned the strategy were accused of being a menace to the public health. They were a threat. They were a danger. All those kind of things. Well, I think we've got to drop that attitude, and it seems that has actually started to fall away a bit, which is good. There seems to be a little bit more questioning this time around. I think we need to keep having those healthy conversations where people are unafraid to say, "Look, I'm not an expert, but I don't have to be to recognise when something's prudent and when it's imprudent." I don't have to be an expert or a scientist in a particular field. I just need to be able to think well, to recognise when someone is acting in a way that's prudent and when they are doing things that don't really make sense. And that's the kind of conversations we need to keep happening. And I think on top of all of that, and probably most importantly of all really, is that we need to continue to help those in need around us, that particularly if you're in Auckland, but any state of lockdown, the people you know who are struggling, help them out, do what you can, love them. And I mean that authentically, not in some weird, mushy, hippie, sort of sentimental kind of way. I mean getting alongside them and doing practical things and ensuring that their well-being is, like, if you know a business owner who's really getting pummeled and they're really struggling psychologically through it, get alongside them. you know, help their families, love them, you know, be with them through this. So I think we've got to help each other through this. And one last thing, can I say, if you're in particularly in level four in Auckland and you're really sort of grappling with this, or you ever find yourself in future in a situation where we're locked down and it's really, really hurting you, I would say one of the best strategies for dealing with this kind of, you know, unforeseen and absolute and total chaos that can come upon a person's life, one of the best strategies for dealing with that I saw or I've ever read came from Viktor Frankl. And Viktor Frankl wrote Man's Search for Meaning. It's a book that I highly recommend, probably more pertinent than even before, but it's a book that I highly recommend everyone reads at least once in their life. But in that book, so Viktor Frankl was a psychologist who who's Jewish and who lived under the Nazi regime, and he was imprisoned at multiple different Nazi concentration camps. He lost his wife and unborn child at Auschwitz concentration camp, and he comes out of it and writes one of the most profoundly beautiful and important self-help, quote-unquote, self-help books that has ever been written, called Man's Search for Meaning. And it really cuts through all of the dross, and it's not trivial, and it's just so deep and profound. One of the strategies he talked about in there was he related the stories of how men survived the camps and the constant, ongoing, never-ending concentration camp regime. As Jews, how did they survive it? And he said, well, those he saw who survived it were the people who didn't set for themselves deadlines. So the people who said, we're going to be free by summer, or I've just heard the Allies are bombing, you know, we're going to be out in the next month. He said, what would happen is those men who would set that concrete sort of deadline for themselves of when they were going to be free from the chaos and the carnage and the imprisonment, those men, those people did not survive. Invariably what happened was they got to their arbitrary and self-determined deadline and they were not free, and then everything took hold, and basically the psychological carnage just unleashed in a massive way upon them, because they at that point, that was sort of when the hopelessness really set in. So I think, and I found this helpful throughout this lockdown period, remembering that, and you know what, each day it's a new day, I've got to wake up, I've got to embrace the suck of this day, and I'm not going to set myself arbitrary deadlines for when we're getting out of this. And in fact, in my mind, psychologically, what I've done is I've said, you know what, this could well be the new normal. I don't think it will be, but this could well be the new normal. So if this is the new normal for the rest of my life, am I prepared for that? And when you say, okay, I'm going to get myself psychologically prepared for that, then all of a sudden, your capabilities and your competency of dealing with what's going on right now in the midst of this thing, it improves massively. So that would be my encouragement. Don't set yourself artificial deadlines. Don't look to various theories and ideas floating around on social media about when the deadline's coming, we're going to get out of it. Instead, assume that you're never getting out of it, and then start embracing and accepting that reality. And I guarantee you, you will actually find that you start to navigate this thing a whole lot better. Thanks for tuning in. You guys are awesome. Don't forget to share this episode and any of the others that you found helpful. I really appreciate all of your support and all your feedback. I will see you next time on The Dispatches. The Dispatches podcast is a production of Left Foot Media. If you enjoyed this show, then please help us to ensure that more of this great content keeps getting made by becoming a patron of our work at patreon.com/leftfootmedia. Link in the show notes. Thanks for listening. See you next time on The Dispatches.